have such a wonderful family of independent bookstores to supply our book picks for the weeks. And this morning we welcome the Bennington Bookshop. Owner Phil Lewis joins us this Tuesday morning with a terrific list of books to share. Phil, good morning. Thank you very much, as always, for being on the show.
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to have you here. So where shall we begin?
Okay, first up this morning is The Final Revival of Opal and Nev by Dawny Walton. It's the 70s. Punk rock is storming the music world. Neville Charles has his eyes set on the stars. He wants to be one. He has the accent, working class British. He has the words. Songs come naturally to him. He just needs a singer, someone whose voice will drive his lyrics to the edge and beyond. He scours the U.S. music scene, frequenting clubs and bars, and there, one night, trying out at a talent show, he discovers Opal Jewel. They are signed by Rivington Records, a somewhat shady newcomer to the record producing scene. They quickly produce a studio album and embark on a national promotional tour with Rivington Records' other new recruits. Nev fully expects them to be top of the bill and is disappointed to find that they're at number two position, behind a southern heavy metal rock band. They play to small crowds at first, the numbers slowly growing until the night of their final concert. For some reason, two rows of prime seats at the front of the venue lie vacant. Just as the night begins, the rows are filled with a noisy crowd of bikers, here to see their heroes from the south. Opal and Nev's opening song is interrupted when the lead singer of the rival band stumbles on stage, draped in a Confederate flag. Opal seizes the flag, wraps it around her waist, does a bit of a twerk, and a riot breaks out. The evening ends in chaos, and it looks like Opal and Nev's careers are in tatters before they've even begun. The Final Revival of Opal and Nev is told as a documentary. There are takes and outtakes, a snippet here, a snippet there, a comment from the owner of the record label, background from Opal's family. The music journalist, Est Sunny Shelton, weaves a compelling tale. She thought she knew all the background to their initial success. She's the daughter of the original drummer, after all. But as she delves deeper into the rise, then abrupt fall, and the planned revival of the band, she gets a fresh take on what happened the night of the riot. This is a novel of race and tension, friendship and betrayal. It's a powerful read, exciting at times, moving and sad. The documentary style takes a couple of chapters to get used to, but the format ends up working really well. I was quickly engrossed and read this in one sitting one rainy afternoon.
The name of the book, The Final Revival of Opal and Nev. All right, next up.
Next up is The Magician by Colm Tóibín. Colm Tóibín's latest book paints a picture of the life and times of the great German writer Thomas Mann. It's wonderfully done, setting biographical details against a historical backdrop and providing insights into Mann's creative process. The book documents Mann's struggles to come to terms with who he is and what he stands for in the social and political turmoil of the first half of the 20th century. The book opens in Lübeck in 1891. Mann is a child, competing with his brother for the attention of their mother, Julia. The father is a successful businessman. They are a well-to-do family, prim and proper, except for Julia, with her Brazilian upbringing. This is the family of Mann's first novel, Buddenbrooks. At school, Thomas is drawn to another boy and begins to furtively explore his sexuality. After leaving school, Thomas is groomed for a position in the family business. He spends his days huddled over the office desk, pretending to work on the accounts, but in reality, writing short stories. One of these is published to some acclaim, and Thomas quits his day job to try to make a career of writing. Thomas marries Katia, daughter of a prominent Jewish family. This marriage has repercussions down the line as Nazism raises its ugly head. The Manns flee Germany, taking up residence in Switzerland, where Katia is confined to a sanatorium for her health. This setting provides the inspiration for another of Mann's novels, The Magic Mountain. The Magician is a beautifully written book. It almost works as a biography, but it's much more accessible. We learn so much about Thomas Mann and his struggles with his sexuality. We watch as Mann, now a Nobel laureate, is torn between responsibility and fear for Cartier's family, left behind in Germany, and calls by the international community for him to denounce Nazism. And we're invited to observe how the mundane details of everyday life were woven into works of genius by one of the last century's great writers.
The name of the book is The Magician by Colm Tóibín. Excellent. Next up.
Next up is The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams. Mukesh Patel lives alone in his house in Wembley, London. It's been a year since his beloved wife, Naina, passed away, and he's still to come to terms with his loss. He spends his days watching nature shows on TV, or doing the handful of errands that seem to take longer each week. There's shopping day, and bin day to punctuate the week. There's also temple day, although he doesn't often attend. Mukesh's daughters, each with a family and life of their own, worry about his mental health. Each morning, they bombard him with telephone calls, nagging him into some kind of action, any kind of action, just to get him out of the house. They descend on his house one day and begin to tidy Naina's things away. "It's time to move on with your life," they tell him. And that's when they find the library book, long overdue. Naina was an avid reader and a regular visitor to the local library. Mukesh is tasked with returning the book to the library. There he meets Alicia, a sulky teenager working at the library for the summer. Mukesh asks Alicia for advice about what books to read. He wonders if he can make some connection with his dead wife by reading some of the books she loved. Alicia hands him a reading list she has just found in the back of a book. As Mukesh slowly works his way through the list, he and Alicia become friends. They discuss the books they are reading, finding meaning and applying ideas to their own lonely lives. Over the summer, other reading lists appear in an assortment of places. One is found blowing across the floor of the grocery store. A second is found stuffed into the back of a shoe rack at the temple. They seem to appear just at the right time for the person who finds them. Then the library is threatened with closure. Mukesh and Alicia head a campaign. The community rallies round and a protest is planned. It's a huge celebration of the library, of books, and of people. This is a heartwarming novel about community and connections. Adams's touch is light. She gently coaxes her characters out of their shelves, out of their sadness, and into the sunshine. Through the medium of books, they gradually build bridges to each other and to lost loved ones. And it's through books that Mukesh finally managed to connect with Priya, the granddaughter he loves, who is an avid reader just like his dear wife.
The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams. All right, next.
Next up is Falling by T.J. Newman. And this is a sneak preview. Falling is released next month. Falling opens with a nightmare. There's been an explosion on a plane. The cabin is breached. A passenger has been sucked out of the aircraft. And the pilot, Bill Hoffman, is locked out of the cockpit. There are screams and alarms and a sense of total chaos. Then Bill wakes up. Just another nightmare. The same one, night after night. He gets up and joins his family for breakfast, then heads off to work. He really is a pilot, and the real nightmare is just about to begin. Today, he's piloting Coastal 416 from L.A. to New York. It's a routine flight, 5.5 hours, 144 passengers plus the regular crew. Back on the ground, his wife Carrie's preparations for the day are interrupted by the doorbell. It's a technician from the phone company investigating a reported outage in the area, or so he says. Flight 416 has just reached cruising altitude when Bill receives a message. It's a photo of Carrie wearing a suicide bomber's vest loaded with explosives. Carrie and the children have been kidnapped. The ransom demand is simple: crash the plane or his family will die. Falling is the perfect summer read. It's a fast-paced thriller with all the right ingredients. Who is the kidnapper's accomplice on the plane? Why do they want to crash the plane? Where are his wife and children being kept? And how will Bill and his crew resolve the situation? The pages seem to turn faster and faster as the tension grows. Ladies and gentlemen, please fasten your seatbelts. And a warning, don't read Falling at the Airport before boarding your flight.
Yeah, seems like
I don't recommend it.
Very good, good advice. Falling is the name of the new book by T.J. Newman. Okay, next up, a final book,
okay.
I guess.
Thief of Souls by Brian Klingborg. Lu Fei graduated from China's top police academy in Beijing. He worked in a large regional city for a while before being transferred to Raven Valley Township, a remote village in northern China. Ostensibly a promotion to inspector, the move was more about keeping the scrupulously honest Lu out of the affairs of his corrupt superiors. Nothing much happens in his little village, where the theft of a chicken is considered a serious crime. Lu idled through his days, spending his weekends at the Red Lotus Bar, drinking rice wine and dreaming of possible futures with the beautiful waitress Yan Yan. His weekend reveries are interrupted by a call from the local police security bureau. A body has been found, its organs removed, and its mouth stuffed with incense paper. But before Lu can really embark on an investigation, the case is taken over by a rising star from the Criminal Investigation Department in Beijing. In the interest of stability and security, Beijing's goal is to swiftly find someone on whom to pin the murder so things can get back to normal as quickly as possible. Largely sidelined, Lu is left on his own to wade through the murky evidence and identify the true killer before he can strike again. Brian Klingborg's writing is tight and spare. In a few simple words, he conjures up scenes and characters that ring with authenticity. I felt I was there, in Raven Valley, following closely in the shadow of Inspector Lu. I felt transported to this remote area of northern China and invited in to get to know the motley crew of characters. That being said, I'm a little conflicted. I wonder how accurate Klingborg's portrayal of the Chinese people and their motivations is. Shouldn't I be reading a mystery set in China, written by a Chinese writer? In the end, though, Thief of Souls is a good read. It's the first in a promised series of mysteries to feature Inspector Lu Fei. I look forward to reading more.
Thief of Souls is the name of the book. Brian Klingborg is the author. And we just have a moment or two. Anything else you'd like to tell us that's happening at the Bennington Bookshop?
We've got some bookshop news. We have an online event with Madeleine Koonin, the former governor of Vermont, next Friday at 6 p.m.
Very nice.
It costs $25 and includes a signed copy of her latest book of poetry. So you can register for that at www.parkmccullough.org.
Excellent.
And then our other big news is we're moving to a new space on South Street at Bennington in the next few weeks. So we're very excited about that, but we'll have to close for a few days to make the move.
Excellent. So all kinds of good stuff. You can find out
happening in the bookshop.
Absolutely. You can find out more information by going to www.benningtonbookshop.com. Of course, you can see this book list and all past book lists by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Phil Lewis, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
All right. Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.